From America's most pressing political fires like Minneapolis to the national stage, Chris Cuomo joins us for part two of our in-depth conversation regarding the latest headlines and how they will affect America's path in the future. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes, and this is Perspective. Chris Cuomo has spent decades covering our nation's defining moments, major criminal justice stories, presidential scandals, and cultural upheavals. He's interviewed presidents, governors, and world leaders. Tonight, we take his perspective into the heart of the current American controversy. This week, Minnesota has become a flashpoint with federal immigration enforcement actions that have led to a fiery protest, multiple deaths, and arrest. Public officials are calling for answers, and the nation is divided over federal authority and local sovereignty. Tonight, we ask what's really happening on the ground, and how should America be responding? How do we balance public safety with individual rights? And what role does national leadership play in uniting or dividing the country? Chris, thank you for being here and joining us for part two on this absolutely important conversation that just continues to go on. This was a headline that we thought might just be a week, and it's been several weeks that we continue in Minneapolis. You've seen how media frames these protests, these conflicts. In Minneapolis, federal immigration lawyers are actually saying that action has led to more arrests, fiery protests, tragic deaths are happening. But many locals believe that they are unjustified. Conservatives believe in law and order. So from your perspective, what is the fine line and what is not happening to bring peace to the streets of Minneapolis right now?
I think like most things, it's become completely politicized. So it's like a Rorschach test. You see what you want to see. And people want it simple. They want you to say, I'm against MAGA or I'm for MAGA. And if there's any context, any subtlety, it's unsatisfying. And they go back to the bubble of where someone explains to them why everything the president is doing is unconstitutional, or where everything he is doing is exactly what he said he was going to do, and that people who are against him hate the country. They go back in their bubble. Very tough spot for us, because truth is context. Truth is nuance, right? There's a subjectivity to it. It's not 2 + 2 = 4. God will it to be. That would be great, but that's not the world we live in. And we see it again and again. Is ICE doing the wrong thing? Is ICE doing the right thing? Just the way you phrased the question. Both, right? Why have laws if you don't enforce them? How you enforce them matters, right? Oh, now you're into nuance. What do you mean how? They're cops, that's what they do. No, but how they do it matters, right? If they catch me speeding and I'm going 86 in a 55 and they punch me in the face, that's not right. It's not constitutional.
But actions have consequences. They broke the law in the first place.
That's right.
That comes back to the heart of the situation. The law was broken in the first place.
Context.
Context of it.
And that's the challenge, is that people don't want the context. They don't want the nuance. They want it to be obvious. They want it to be clear. They want it to be simple. And that's not how life works, let alone politics.
But do you not believe that both sides are benefiting from this in some way? Because if one side was actually being hurt by it, they would do everything they can.
100%.
Okay.
All the problems work for the powerful. The conflict works for the powerful. Nowhere else in your life do the rules of politics apply. You can say, oh, my workplace is political. There is no one who works anywhere that is an ongoing successful business where you have a problem and you don't fix it, and that in-house you just fight over whose fault it is.
Except for politics.
Only politics. Look at immigration. Right. What's the issue behind the issue behind the issue with ICE? What are our laws? Why don't they change them? Why don't they change the asylum laws? Why don't they do any of these things? Because the problem works better. The right gets to look at the left and say, you people have no brain. And the left gets to look at the right and say, you people have no heart. And that's enough. It's enough for the division and to have to pick a side. You got to pick a side, Scotty. Got to pick a side. Which is it? Lesser of two evils. And it's become more profoundly that, and Minnesota is a metaphor for the madness.
Okay, so how do we de-escalate Minnesota? Where does this turn out? Look into your crystal ball. How do we actually bring it back to where you get productive laws coming out or new rules that come out of it?
Here's the problem. Incentive structure. With our kids, at some point you learn a really annoying lesson that certainly wasn't the way my parents did it, which is You get behavior change by rewarding people for doing it the right way, not punishing them for doing it the wrong way. It may feel better to punish them for doing it the wrong way, that like this is what happens, this is the consequence. But we know from a social science perspective, incentive structure is what changes behavior. So that means you got to reward people for doing it right. We don't. The algorithms by design, our political process, our media is inherently set up to provoke the negative and to enhance the negative and magnify and amplify the negative. So if you go first, you and I have been beefing about whatever it is. I decide, Scotty, I come here in peace. Let's reset. Let's talk about it again. Oh, Cuomo got owned. Cuomo's destroyed. Cuomo gave in. Look at Trump.
Right.
Trump surrenders. Whoa. Everybody says the situation is wrong. He says, I took the call from the governor. We're going to figure this out. Nobody wants what's going on. He surrenders? Why would you say it that way? Why would you say exactly?
Because you want to keep stirring the pot up.
That's what they,
because that's how they benefit. Why we haven't had immigration before. But you also, like you said, let's go back to the law. There is a clear definition. And what is that line between what we're talking about, civil liberties, and where protest and actual peaceful protest versus making a difference? Where is that line of protection?
The line is much clearer on the protest side. Say what you want. Do not touch person or property. As soon as you touch person or property, you are committing a crime. So you break up my store, you kick my taillight, you touch a police officer, which to me is just crazy. I don't know why anybody would do that and think something not terrible is about to happen.
Because there's been no consequences.
Well, we've seen it again and again. I mean, not just in Minnesota. You mess with a cop when they're trying to arrest you, you're going to lose, okay? It's just about to what degree that you lose, which is really putting you at the mercy of the training and affect of that officer in that moment. But so protest, where's the line? We know where the line is. You say what you want to say. You touch, you lose, okay? It's a much grayer line on the law enforcement side, not in terms of how to deal with a protester. That should be fairly simple. But you're committing a crime. What kind of crime? What degree of crime? What is the policy behind it, right? A cop sits on the side of the highway, watches you go by at 75, meow, watches me go down at 90, meow, decides to come after me. Why? You were speeding too. Oh, yeah, but I'm going after you. Why? Because you're going faster. It's more dangerous, and I didn't like the car you had. There's subjective judgments to prosecutorial discretion. So you're not in the country legally. Is everyone in that class the same? Never has been. Never has been. Maybe now that's what you want, but it never has been. Oh, but they're all committing a crime. That's not the prosecutorial discretion part of it. The country, as an overwhelming and solid and durable majority, wants people who are here illegally and pose a violent threat to society out. They want them out. Do that. How do you do that? That's where it gets tricky. How do you do that? Well, you got to get cooperation from the locals. Otherwise, you're going to have to do it like this. And people don't want it like this. So what do you have to do? You do what Trump did with Holman now before you go in.
But that's the thing. Do you feel like these goalposts have moved? I mean, when Trump was first starting this off, he was saying, we're going to go and we're going to arrest the violent criminals first. Now it's more of a blanket.
Well, he's always said, not as loudly, I'm getting rid of all of them. Now,
but he's also said he was going to build a big, beautiful door to let them back in, and yet we have zero conversation about immigration reform, legal immigration reform.
That was metaphor, Scotty.
Okay, sorry. I took it for his word.
You campaign in poetry, you govern in prose. So the wall was a metaphor, right? It literally was a metaphor. They gave it to him as an idea early on.
Would the American people be okay with that? Do you think that would make this more palatable of saying, fine, get him out, but give them a chance to come back through legally in an easier, more mainstream process?
No, we've weaponized the idea of access. And look, how do we know this? So one of the features of the administration's policy, which I think is very good, and it's very interesting about how little time they spend on it, is what they just raised from 1,000 to 2,600 or whatever the VIG is. I'll pay you to self-deport. I'll give you the ticket. You register. I'll check you out. I'll even give you priority to come back. To me, that is the best part of the administration's policy in terms of how do you get the most people out.
And a lot of people took advantage of it.
Yes, a record number. But they rarely talk about it the way they talk about coming there and breaking heads, if that's what it takes. Why? because that's where we are politically, the muscularity of going against these people who this president made look worse than any past president. We've had Republican and Democratic presidents want to enforce immigration law and talk about
President
the problem.
President Obama deported
never like
more.
This. Sure, but not like this. Not the messaging and not the MO. Not like this.
But it's also the confrontation. Republicans didn't have the backbone to make this a national scandal to push back on Obama, probably because they agreed with it. Democrats don't necessarily agree with it in certain areas. Maybe they take advantage of the situation. Do you think that's a part of it?
Like if, oh, of course.
That if Democrats for once are fighting it because that's what they don't like the policy. Republicans didn't fight it when the Democrat was doing it because they liked the policy the Democrat was doing. Yet Democrats didn't get angry at Obama for doing it when he did it.
Democrats, some people got angry at Obama. There were some protests. He wasn't known for inflammatory rhetoric, and he didn't have a target on immigrants, undocumented or otherwise, the way Trump does. Obama didn't get elected to do anything where immigration was involved, per se.
He campaigned on it.
Right. So there is that. They have been weaponized politically, and the Democrats are in a fix. They are now the out party. They are populist outrage. They are a bigger version of what MAGA was, okay? You saw that No Kings thing. Biggest demonstration in modern history. They can't have Trump do anything good. He cannot say or do anything good. At a minimum, it has to be a surrender that he is giving in to the other side, but you cannot agree with him. He is a Nazi. He is Hitler to Democrats in the main. And if you treat him any other way, you say, well, he shouldn't have done this. Or, but this worked. You just normalized. You just sane-washed a devil. Do you know that? That is a really tough spot. Now, for them, it's going to work in magnifying their base. I do not think it makes them approachable to independents. And we'll see in the midterms if I'm wrong, if they stay this way. But that's a tough spot. So they don't want to work with him either. They don't want to work with him. They want to oppose him the same way the Tea Party and MAGA wanted to oppose Obama and then Biden.
And it worked for
them. It worked. And the Democrats saw it. And you want to be what beat you.
Right. And that's how that works. Okay, we're going to continue this conversation because Chris Cuomo, after the break, is going to talk about economic realities under this Trump administration and which Americans are actually benefiting and where they're being hurt, both short term and in the long term. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Chris Cuomo is here, and we're turning to the economy, something that affects every American household. Now, I have to ask you, before we get to politics and the future involving the next presidential campaign, because we're already in it, I want to talk about President Trump's economic policies. When you're looking at it right now, are you seeing that from deregulation to tax reforms to tariffs, conservatives are arguing that President Trump is doing good. He's creating an economic growth, higher employment, stronger energy independence. Do you think ordinary Americans agree with Republican politicians that are speaking these talking points right now?
No. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're wrong. I think they're wrong. But it doesn't matter because politics is perception. And if you feel, if you perceive that cost of living is getting worse and you're worried about the future, who's in power? It's on their watch. You know, Truman said the buck stops here. We've never heard President Trump say that, right? He usually throws somebody else under the bus. But you own the status quo as president, good, bad, or indifferent. So no, there's absolutely a disconnect between people who are saying things are way better now and people who are living it. We see it every time we measure it.
Do you think President Trump knows that some of the things he's saying is not resonating, that people are going, eh, not necessarily? Do you think
yes.
he's being, you think he knows that he's
yes.
just, if he says it 1,000 times, the emperor has no clothes, the emperor has no clothes?
No, because that would apply to him, and he definitely does not do self-criticism. But why is he attacking the word affordability? Because he wants the Democrats to be the problem. Affordability is not a thing. They made it up. And if it is a thing, they created it. And everything's going much better now. He knows it matters. That's why he was in Iowa the other night. That's why he had his affordability tour, which was weird that he called it that when he says it's not a thing. But he's nothing if not mixing messages from time to time. This is the issue, though, Scotty. This is the issue that will be transcendent in the midterms. No matter how you try to get me upset about something else, the people who are going out, This credit card, everything that we're dealing with or asking to deal with is a symptom of this. Mm-hmm. Credit cards. Why do you need act? Nobody's looking to pay 17% on money. Why would you? Desperation. Well, no, Americans need to do with less. Careful. You don't judge the voters, okay? Even if you're right, you do not judge the voters. You do not blame the voters.
Especially when you're Donald Trump
grievances.
And you have gold buildings with your name on it. It's
right.
Really hard to say.
Buy less. Don't have two dogs.
Right. Two dolls. I think it was your daughter.
Whatever it is.
One or two dolls. That's not the messaging that goes well.
No, people don't
want
to hear
that. We're capitalists. We want to be able to earn. We want
to
work hard and earn money.
You're here to give me abundance.
Right.
You're here to make it better. Don't tell me that I got to tighten my purse strings. What are you talking about here? So that's not going to last. Affordability, cost of living, whatever you want to call it, pocketbook economics, pick your name. That's the story of the midterms. Whoever makes the case that we got to be able to do better than this, and here were the mistakes, they win.
But do you feel like the American public, especially with social media, we have short-term memories. We remember that it was not good underneath Biden, just like remember it's not doing so well under Trump either. Do we just say the heck with it? I'm not going to get my heart, my hope up once again in a politician, so why am I even going to engage?
Hope springs eternal. That's why you vote. That's why you care.
But you're seeing continued voter disengagement. You're seeing numbers. Most populations look at 19 to 20% is all that's voting in even municipal elections.
Lower, but we've seen huge turnout on the national level, right? We keep having more votes than ever, and that's part of it was population increase, although not anymore, because now the population is not responsible for the growth in the electorate. It's engagement. So, or you could argue enragement, but they're coming out, they're voting. The president got the most votes we've ever had before. Okay, and that was true in the last election also for Biden. So I think they'll be there. The question is, why are they there? And I do not think it'll be about what ICE is doing. And if it is, the president's got a problem. It's going to be about what is going to be best for my chances to have more money going forward.
You say that, but then let's also look at foreign policy and this administration's foreign policy. Critics on both sides, but even the conservatives are saying focus on your domestic issues. But yet we're seeing more increases around the globe internationally. Do you think that the president getting more engaged in some of these, I mean, we know obviously the Don Rowe doctrine here within our hemisphere, but what you're talking about, we're talking about Iran, we're talking about Israel, we're talking about Ukraine, Russia. Do you think that that's helping the president in the midterms, or does he really, if he really cares about the midterms, people want him to focus here at home?
I don't know. I was surprised by his exuberance for abroad. But he's had...
Because he campaigned against it. He said America first.
I know, but he's taken some big swings.
Mm-hmm.
And he got the hostages back in the Middle East. And look, I'm not saying that, look, he fixed the Middle East. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that was ambitious. In fact, I said it at the time. When Biden, you know, was making some moves in that direction, I said, that's a ballsy thing to do because it's very low percentage. When Trump did it, I said the same thing, especially because of how he campaigned, that this is really ambitious for him to want to put America out there this way. And he got it done. They are not fighting the way they were before.
But they're still fighting.
But look, you only control so much.
Right.
And him taking out the nuclear capabilities in Iran. Venezuela, to me, I wouldn't have gone there. But I don't think you can look at it and say it was a loss for him in terms of people's certainly not because of the excellence of how the military aspect of it went in terms of their doing what they're supposed to do. You can argue that you're killing civilians in another country and you're taking
their leader
without color of authority, which is a very open question. But
you would think Democrats would be hopping on at this point, except they're actually happy about the change to a certain extent.
Maybe. I don't know. Look, I think that it's so hard to know how to deal with Trump. He's doing something different every other day. Look, today, the day that we're shooting this, deal with it any way you want, is supposed to be Epstein Disclosure Day.
Right.
But we got Don Lemon Day
right
now. Thanks to Don Trump. The two Dons, you know, have put us in this situation. It's supposed to be about something else. What do you focus on? Very tricky. And by design.
Well, and so that brings us to the 2028 elections. Because like you said, J.D. Vance, you already see him gearing up. Everybody's already gearing up on both sides, on this side of it. Is that healthy to be this early? And are we really going to have that this approach is going to energize voters for the midterms? Or is it going to be the exact opposite? Is it people going to say, it's just pointless? It doesn't matter who I put into office. It's not going to make a difference.
I think there's so much headhunting that you're always better undercover, being on the low side of awareness as long as you can be. But I also think you got to be a disruptor. I think for Democrats especially. That's why, you know, people say Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom wouldn't be my choice. But the idea that, well, it's going to be
him.
So
who's your choice?
I don't have one. I mean, we got to see.
But who do you think on the Democrats? Who are they? Who do you think's winnable in this country?
I honestly believe it's someone that you and I aren't talking about right now. Because it's got to be a disruptor. It's got to be an outsider.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's going to be the exact opposite. I think people are going to go, I'm tired of the chaos. I've just lived through it. See where that got me. I want the Obama, you know, even though Obama followed peaceful Bush. But I'm thinking Andy Beshear out of Kentucky. I'm thinking they're going to want calm and peace. And not necessarily
maybe.
Continue these
fireworks. I hope you're right on some levels.
I don't know if Democrats want it. I think the country wants it.
But you got to get through the primary process. And I think that they're going to have a lot of outrage motivating them. You know, this works. This algorithmic MAGA mentality works. People are angry. I'm very, very more worried than ever in my 25-year career that we're going to see blood in the streets the way you and I never lived through before here in America, not since the 60s, okay? I'm really worried about that, and I want to be wrong. I don't want it to happen, but we're escalating in a way I've never seen before, and I really believe that Democrats want a warrior, and if you want a warrior, it's hard to be a warrior from within. Because they'll say, well, you made Andy Beshear, I mean, you know, good governor, but you made compromises, man. You're part of this machine. You didn't speak out. And you didn't do this. And you didn't do that. I think they want their own outsider. You don't have to be a jerk to be a disruptor. You know what I mean? It could be a woman, too, by the way. And it could be someone who comes from outside it, so I don't have the blame.
Is this coming off of the effect of the last four terms we went, your own personal experience of watching what happened in New York and going, the outsider winning? Are you seeing that being a bigger phenomenon within the country? Is that kind of how you're forming this?
That's why Trump got
involved. Would you have said this 2 years ago or a year and a half ago?
No, but they were in a different position. I thought, I would have told you before the last presidential election, Biden's not going to run.
Right.
Because that's what he promised. They're going to have a primary, and it ain't going to be Harris. We'll figure out, maybe Shapiro, maybe the lady in Michigan, but we'll see. We'll see. That's what I would have said. But they screwed it all up through bad leadership. And the Democratic Party didn't have a democratic process. So, you know, they gave Trump an opportunity. They're not wrong when they say we lost, he didn't win. Whatever, he's still president. You can define it any way you want. I do think they'll be looking for an outsider. Doesn't mean that the person's going to have to be obnoxious. You know what I mean? You could be plenty likable and be someone who's done something really successful somewhere else, wants to bring that here, and has a couple of ideas and gimmicks that sound better than what else you're hearing.
So then tell me about, we said outsider, insider within this administration. Who do you feel like President Trump is listening to most? Who is directing the most of his policy?
You and I both know that if I were to give you one name, it would be an incomplete answer because he is a selective listener. And I think it depends. You know, I don't think Stephen Miller is there because he's had the most durable, best ideas. I think it's because of how insanely loyal he is and how he is seen as a MAGA mascot. And if, you know, if anything negative were to happen to him, it would look like weakness for MAGA. You know, I think that's as much of his persistence in the middle, at the center of Trump's world, as it is about his competence. I think it's about his loyalty. But look, I think the star in the administration right now is Rubio, in terms of people in positions of power.
He's doing all the positions. Yeah. The memes are true. They keep giving him a different position.
And he just seems, maybe just by comparison, I don't know, seasoned, measured, gravitas. You know what I mean? Like, I remember he was a kid like 2 minutes ago with the water and the shake. Not anymore. Now, when he's in front of a hearing, he's like, no, I understand your question. Let me explain the context to you for you because you don't have it right. There is not you with your question. I don't like your question. He's above all that, at least comparatively. Okay. And I find him to be the standout. You could say, well, what about Bessin? I don't see him politically on the next level. So I'm not measuring him through the same lens.
Interesting. Chris, thank you so much for joining us in this conversation. Love to have your foresight. That crystal ball, you know, I'll hold you back in 4 years and see if they actually come true. Thanks for joining me. You know, tonight's conversation underscores something fundamental. Complexity doesn't fit neatly into sound bites. From debates over federal enforcement to economic legacies, and from diplomacy to elections yet to come. America's challenges reflect a nation who is struggling with identity and direction. Chris Cuomo's perspective formed at the crossroads of journalism and national discourse, but it raises as many questions as it answers. But that's the point. This isn't about agreement. It's about accountability, insight, and thoughtful engagement with issues that are affecting real Americans every day. Chris, I want to thank you for joining me on these two shows. And to our audience, thank you for actually tuning in and keeping an open mind to this conversation. Because this has been Perspective, and I want to thank you for watching. See you next time.